I'm on holiday this week, so I have not been reading any stories. Nothing of interest has happened. So I'm going to, like, what they call a do an Andy and take it easy this episode.
How are we going to tell the difference between this episode and every other episode?
That's
it's
the
like
secret.
You read the show notes for the first time as we're going through the show.
You're listening to the Host Unknown podcast.
Hello, hello, hello. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening from wherever you are joining us. And welcome to episode 117-ish.
121.
Of the Host Unknown podcast. We've got to give Andy his airtime every week. Just makes him feel better. Yes,
I'm
welcome.
The only one
welcome.
That can count on this show.
I actually went through every episode. I'm telling you.
Yes, but the number you give is the number of episodes that you've published. The number I give is the number of episodes that we've recorded.
Is it actually an episode if it isn't published?
Well, if I've given the time, it's an episode.
What if it's published and it's got no views? What's your position on that?
Or listens or downloads or whatever. Indeed. Well, you know, a podcast being published is probably the internet is its first listener,
and obviously the you know, the government.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a win-win for our Chinese handler. So, I trust you, dear listener, are well. It's been, it has been both a hot week and a wet week. So, hopefully you are both cool and dry at the moment. Jav, talking of cool and dry, how are you?
Yes. So, I've got this week off, so I'm joining you on my day off.
Get you. You mean you're not going shopping?
Honoured. Absolutely honoured you could join us.
I know, you're welcome. So, I actually woke up today and I was like merrily going about my business, and then suddenly I was like, oh, is today Friday? What am I meant to be doing today? And I was like, oh, record the podcast. So,
turn up, oh, that's right, I need to turn up late for something.
Yes, exactly. I don't know why you keep referring to what we have as the show notes. It's the teleprompter. It's like the words that you're meant to read as you go through it. So why do you hate on me for reading it while we're on this show? Full stop.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Yeah, please don't read everything out, though, Jav, all right? It's there are some rather personal notes in there.
Yeah. So, Jav, just hit refresh on the show notes for me, would you?
So you've had a good week off. You've been travelling anywhere?
I went up to Blackpool to see Blackpool Tower, and we were queuing up to see the tower, and two of my kids were like, that looks really high. We're scared. And my wife was like, this line is moving really slowly, I can't be bothered to wait. So we saw the tower from outside at the footpath level, and that's it.
Well, I mean, you did go there to see the Blackpool Tower, so I guess technically, you know, mission accomplished.
Yes.
Good. Thanks for the dead air. Talking of dead air, Andy.
Hey.
It's the Fonz again.
I'm doing good. Do you know what? This week I have been, you know, I did sort of leave all sort of social medias, but on TikTok the last couple of weeks, I'm sure Jav can attest, there's been more and more compilations of people's Be Real accounts. So Be Real is another sort of social network app where it randomly messages you once per day. So once every 24 hours, it'll send you a message and you've got 2 minutes to take a photo of where you are. And what it does, it will take a photo of your front and back cameras at the same time. And that's it. You've got no time for a filter. You've got no time for anything else. You can't view your friends' photos until you've posted your own.
And your photo is only live for 24 hours before it's deleted.
Sorry, in inverted commas, deleted.
Well, obviously, it's still sitting on their server. You can still see it, but no one else can. So, you know, people can't stalk your account. They can't go back, you know, sort of 5 years or whatever and look at what you used to do. But it's actually an app that I'm enjoying because there's no commentary on it. Like, you don't have to speak to anyone. It's literally a proof of life app. Like, you know, are your friends still alive? Yes, no.
So you tried to get me and Jav to join this.
I did. I know, took absolutely zero interest whatsoever.
No, that's right.
But Jav was the same with TikTok, though.
I did read about people, for instance, having to take photos during their grandmother's funeral and things
that
like that.
Yeah, that was a funny one. Yeah. I mean, like the notification came in, right? What are you going to do?
Well, exactly. It's like people think that this is some kind of, you know, Uber being that, you know, demands that they do what they're told. Otherwise, it'll be some kind of ritual sacrifice. I mean, like, what happens if you don't respond?
You can post late. It just tells everyone how late you were. So it'll say, like, you know, this person.
Oh, the
it'll
shame.
Say, like, you posted 5 hours late or whatever. But, you know, at that point, it's a case of, well, you know, now that person's had time to prepare for the photo and they're probably, like, you know, making sure they've got a nice, good backgrounds and all that kind of stuff. That's the whole point, is that, you know...
The mother has stopped weeping in front of the coffin.
Hey, like, do it for the clout.
So now you've explained it, it makes sense, and I'm going to try it out. I didn't understand the concept when you explained it. But
what
this
are you
is,
like?
No, this is the, you know, if it wasn't inconvenient and you didn't have to do it at weird times, it wouldn't be fun. I mean, this is like, so I don't know if you remember Casey Neistat, the YouTuber, like the godfather of YouTube, who perfected the daily vlogs format. He started his media company called Beam, which is Be Me. And that was a similar thing, but it was like short videos. But the way the videos would work, you just pick up your phone and hold it to your chest and it would start recording. So no filter, no nothing. So you'd be like where you were. Ultimately, it didn't take off, but it was acquired by CNN and he got like a few million out of it and what have you. But this is like taking that concept but making it real. It is be real, but... This is brilliant. I'm going to download it right now, so you two carry on talking and ignore
and
any sounds.
It will tell you if someone screenshots your photo as well. Obviously, it's only there for like 24 hours. So,
what about if you take a photo of your phone with the photo on it?
Then the FBI agent that's looking through your camera will notify you.
Oh God, Jack! I can't believe Jack. I honestly thought. You weren't going to do it, Jav.
Look, you know, just set your time zone to European and it would, at some point during the day, it will...
It's
you know.
You two millennials. I tell you what. Or Gen Zers
so,
or whatever.
Let's hand over to the baby boomer. How's your week been?
Well, I managed to chew my food without breaking my dentures.
And the care home, the staff have been nice.
They're lovely. They're such wonderful people. Apart from Mrs. Nybaum. Oh my God, she's a bitch. Never liked her. interesting week. Obviously too hot, and then too wet. Obviously, but yeah. The
title of your sex tape, is it? Yeah.
Do you know what? I think I will. I'll take that. I'll take that one. Yeah. Too hot, too wet. But today's my last working day and I got a week off, which is going to be nice.
Yeah, fantastic.
So I'm not sure what's going to happen next week.
Oh, okay. That's how you tell us, right?
Yeah. Well, just like Jav last week.
I'm sure that, you know, we'll start recording at some point before midnight and... We may get a show out by the following week. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. Shall we see what we've got coming up for you today? Well, this week in InfoSec can go and get fucked. Rant of the Week tries hard to find the value in cyber insurance. Billy Big Balls, Janet Jackson, yes, that Janet Jackson, is the muse for a new CVE. Industry News brings us the latest and greatest security news stories from around the world. And Tweet of the Week is a new security certification you didn't know you qualified for. Okay, time to move on to our favourite part of the show, the part of the show that we like to call...
This Week in InfoSec.
It is that part of the show where we take a stroll down InfoSec memory lane with content liberated from the Today in InfoSec Twitter account and further afield. So our first story takes us back to practically yesterday, just 19 years ago, to the 18th of August 2003, when the Nazi worm began infecting computers to remove the Blaster worm and patch the vulnerability which Nazi and Blaster both exploited. So the original Blaster worm, which I'm sure we've covered around this time in previous years, was around in the wild... sort of from the 11th of August 2003, and it's believed to have been created after security researchers from the Chinese group X-Focus reverse engineered the original Microsoft patch. This is obviously following repeated notifications by the manufacturer that you should install this patch because it could be really bad if you don't. So whilst Blaster was rapidly spreading through networks infecting Windows 2000 and Windows XP machines, there was light at the end of the tunnel. So the Nazi worm, which is also known as Welchia, I believe, began exploiting the exact same RPC vulnerability as a Blaster worm. However, unlike Blaster, it first searched for and then deleted Blaster if it was present, and then downloaded and installed the security patches from Microsoft that would prevent further infection by Blaster. And then to clean up after itself, the worm was programmed to self-remove on the 1st of January 2004, or 120 days after processing, whichever came first. So a worm which we place in the chaotic good category. And I feel like we just don't get good viruses anymore, but, like we used to in the old days.
But what did the Nazi worm actually do?
It's like Blaster, but it patched the server. It patched the machine instead.
So it was
a turf war. Exploited the RPC.
It was a turf war.
Pretty much, yeah. But it was like, you know, get rid of this stuff. Like, we don't need. Yeah, do you know what, like, in the old days, viruses used to be good. You know, they used to be funny, or, you know, they'd shut the machine down. There was a purpose to it.
Like, yeah, Friends of the Show clearly talks about that, doesn't he? You know, in the good old days.
The good old days. Like, it's all ransomware this, ransomware that. And, like, yeah. You know, so many virus writers sold out and cashed in just what used to be a good bit of harmless fun.
Well, you know, that sounds like everything these days. What was once harmless fun is now, you know, middle-aged men hooked onto apps that demands you record whatever's happening.
So there was something like this happened last year where there were some vulnerabilities in some Microsoft Exchange service. I think we might have covered it. And a court order allowed the FBI to go into and
to
remove,
exploit it and then patch it.
Yeah, to exploit it and then patch it. And there was a big hoo-ha about, like, it's not yours, so you shouldn't do it. But I think it's cut from the same cloth of that virus. It goes in and it, like, you know, fixes your shit for you. It's not a rant of the week, but I'm struggling to see which side of the fence to land on in this one, to be honest.
I think that might be a theme of the show. Looking forward to your show notes.
So anyway, our second story takes us back a mere 15 years to the 17th of August 2007, when Drew Curtis, the founder of Fark.com, accused Darrell Phillips, a reporter at Fox 13, of hacking into the social networking news site. So for those who don't remember its popularity in the early noughties, Fark was created in 1999 by obviously this guy called Drew Curtis, And originally, Fart contained no content except for an image of a squirrel with very large testicles, if you recall. And
I don't recall that.
Okay, well, that squirrel image is no longer used in the production area of the site, but I was surprised the site was still running. But that image can also be found on the server's 404 page. So when you hit a site that a page that doesn't exist, you'll get presented with a squirrel with the large testicles. So Fark was launched. It's basically a way of sharing news postings with friends rather than sending them numerous emails. You got, yeah. And the first story posted, the first story ever posted on Fark was about a fighter pilot who crashed while attempting to moon another fighter pilot. You know, totally worth it. So, you know, its popularity, the first year it had sort of like 50,000 page views, and then it went, you know, a million the year after.
Wow.
You could post links, and then, you know, there were forums that were added as lots of sites went through in, you know, the early noughties. But, you know, its popularity grew. I think by the end of 2007, they were averaging around 52 million page views per month from 4 million unique users. So quite a successful site in its heyday. So anyway, this was this all about where you know, he accused this guy of trying to hack into his site. So Darrell Phillips worked for Fox, and they what's his name? Curtis is basically saying that you know, this Trojan kept being sent to them. You know, it was designed to capture passwords and give people access to the Fark servers. And in one case, it actually succeeded, giving this hacker passwords to a file server and one of the Fark employees' email accounts. And they tried to break into the web servers and other emails. Unfortunately, that didn't work. But they were able to trace the hacker back to a particular IP address connected to this Comcast high-speed connection. And how did they trace the hacker back in those days, you ask? Well, at the same time, you know, the suspect, Darrell Phillips, already a Fark member, had logged into several other user accounts on Fark, you know, either ones he'd created or ones which he'd somehow managed to get access. But this guy also purchased, using PayPal, a subscription to the premium area of Fark, which was called Total Fark. And throughout the entire process, he had the exact same IP address as the hacker.
I was going to say, not the sharpest tool in the box, but he was a reporter at Fox. So
yeah, so you know, the suspicion is that around this time, Phillips Station had launched their own news aggregator site called OnMemphis.com. Obviously a Fox-affiliated one. And they're saying that the hacker looks to have been searching for source code and moderation tools. So it was entirely possible that they, you know, that the intent was just to see how other people were doing it and sort of rip off code, which, to be fair, a lot of people did in those days.
It's entirely possible that he was looking to steal stuff.
Yeah, but a lot of people did that in those days to sort of, you know, give their site a one-up.
Isn't that what Trump's Truth Social is? That wasn't that ripped off from code from someone else?
It looks looks suspiciously like another sort of short site which allows you to post, you know, 140 characters at a time and
yeah.
put a little tick next to your name if they think that you're a premium person.
Oh dear! Excellent. Thank you, Andy, for this week's.
In InfoSec.
You're listening to the double award-winning Host Unknown podcast.
Okay, time now to move on to this week's...
Listen up! Rant of the week.
It's time to mother rage!
So much like Jav said about, you know, trying to work out which side of the fence to stand on for this particular thing, I'm the same with this one. So the headline reads, PC Store, and that's a shop that sells PCs, not a policeman in the UK called Store, surname Store. PC Store told it can't claim full cybercrime insurance after social engineering attack. So a Minnesota computer store is suing its crime insurance provider. It's had its case dismissed. Bottom line is, SJ Computers alleged in their lawsuit that Travelers Casualty and Surety Company owed it far more than it paid on a claim for nearly $600,000 in losses due to a successful business email compromise attack, a BEC attack. So what it came down to is SJ Computers became a victim of social engineering and lost a bunch of money and claimed for it on their cyber insurance. The cyber insurance company, or Travelers Casualty, said, nope, we're not paying this because it was from social engineering and that's not covered by your policy. And when they appealed, it was thrown out in court. So part of me thinks, my God, you know, the people selling these cyber insurances are just wiggling out of every single opportunity to pay. But when you find out, when you actually look into it, it's one of the one of the quotes from the case was, SJ Computers did not suffer a penny of financial loss when the bad actor hit send on his email messages. SJ Computers would never have suffered a penny of financial loss if the CEO had not opened those email messages, or if the CEO had asked the purchasing manager about them, or if ERI Direct had answered its phone when the CEO called, or if ERI Direct had promptly returned the voicemail message left by the CEO, or if the CEO had waited to hear from ERI Direct before paying the invoices. So I'm actually on the side of the cyber insurance company, because do we have to insure stupidity? And the CEO, who should know better than this, normally it's the CEO who's been who's the one who's been impersonated to send these messages to prompt people to pay for, you know, to make payments, etc., etc. But when the CEO decides that actually, oh, I have to pay ERI Direct because according to this email I've received, I owe them lots of money and we're going to be in trouble if we don't pay it, etc. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Actually, I've made my mind up. I'm on the side of the insurance here. It was wound me up just reading that. Wow. So this has been thrown out, and rightly so. There is also, you know, I guess you could say small print, for want of a better term. Basically, Travelers agreed to settle with a cap of $100,000 rather than the $600,000 they've actually lost, which I think, frankly, they should be making the most of. They're lucky they got anything back at all. So, folks, read your cyber insurance documents. Find out what you really are covered for, especially now, as there's a lot of changes in your cyber insurance coverage that's going on. And also, really don't do dumb crap like this, like transfer $600,000 to a company just because they said, send us $600,000, especially if you're the CEO. So, Jav, well, what's your opinion? I think I've got an idea.
You siding with big corporations and, and stamping on the little man. That's the little person. That's
well you've got
Tom
lots
Langford.
Of experience
true
of that.
To form. True to form. True to form. Yeah. That's all I say.
And Jav being the little man, absolutely.
See, I mean, this is why Andy, he gets these phishing things all the time. They're apparently from HMRC saying you owe us tax or a self-return. And he just throws them in the bin.
But Andy's got a very good system of not getting compromised by those. And I think the primary approach to that is don't open your emails.
Exactly. Can't get phished if you don't read email.
No, that's right.
Genius.
I think this is where it you know, cyber insurance really breaks down, because when you look at how do companies actually get breached, number one by all measure is some form of social engineering. And if you're not insuring against it, which a lot of them won't, then you as a company have to think, like, is it really worth taking out this insurance, or, you know, what are we actually defending against? Because okay, maybe you're protected against some downtime in the case of a DDoS attack or something. But, you know, a lot of these insurance companies are now putting in place lots of clauses. So, like, you know, do you have a patching policy in place? Are you more than, you know, whatever X period behind on your patches? We'll cover you, but anything more than that and you're not covered. many asking for like multi-factor authentication to be put in place and all those kinds of things. So
yeah,
I mean,
so say you have all of that, right?
Yeah,
like you've got all of these conditions that the insurer, and like, to be fair to him, I'm actually leaning with Jav on this one because you have all. And remember last week we were talking about this new MFA fatigue.
Yes, yes.
Like that. Right, so you've got everything, right? All of these systems, right? Absolutely everything's in place. But then one of your employees clicks approve, you know, on a, you know, like a push notification they didn't expect. Like, if I was the insurer, I'd say, well, that's a social engineering they fell for. You're no longer covered.
Yeah. You would not lost a penny had your employee not clicked approve. You would not have lost a penny had you been able to detect the lateral movement of the account that was compromised, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But as always, Tom is wrong, but it makes
but
it
you're sending $600,000. It said, because the fraudulent invoice included a change of bank account information, the CEO called the vendor for confirmation, but got no response before the deadline listed on the invoice. Like, anybody ever pays invoices on time. And this is the one time the CEO decides to drop 600K to meet a deadline? Come on. That's ridiculous. He just wanted it off his desk. He did not apply due diligence. He needed to have waited for that message for the response from the company. End of story.
Yeah, but
it was incompetence.
Why should he?
Yeah.
Why should he take more time than he needs to? He's paying a hefty premium every month for insurance.
I tell you why he should take more time. I can give you 600,000 reasons why he needed to take more time.
Oh dear.
Quite apart from the fact, the attack was sent because it was the purchasing manager whose account was compromised. Why didn't he pick up the phone to the purchasing manager and say, why are you giving me this now? And by the way, why are these bank account changes? Come on,
you know, you're
600 grand.
You're talking about a real ideal world scenario. They're probably paying like 500,000 invoices on a monthly basis, probably. They probably have like invoices come to them all the time. They're trying to keep on top of things, trying to keep a business running. You know, in an ideal scenario, yes. Oh, I should have called them. I should have picked up on these red flags. I should have done that. You know, but, you know, when people are really working and they're trying to keep a business running, they'll just do whatever. They'll take shortcuts. They'll cut corners and what have you. So,
yeah,
you know,
Shortcuts and cutting corners and all of those. Absolutely. When it comes to 600K, we're fine.
Well, 500K if you count the 100K that they've recovered. So. It's not that bad. It's not that bad.
It's about 15% less bad.
Yeah, exactly. See? Turn that frown upside down.
I can see that Andy's on the side of the little man here or the little big company here, but Jav, I can see you're just doing it for the clout here.
No, nothing like that, Apple. Nothing like that.
Anyway, that was this week's Rant of the Week.
Feeling overloaded with actionable information?
Yep.
Fed up receiving well-researched, factual security content? Ask your doctor if the Host Unknown podcast is right for you.
Always read the label, never double dose on episodes. Side effects may include nausea, eye rolling, and involuntary swearing in anger.
All right, Jeff, your time for the stage. It's time for
Yeah, so, you know, this is the point where Andy's probably thinking, oh, I've revoked his access to the show notes. He can't possibly do this. And he thinks, really, this is my first rodeo. Ha!
No, I know that I can still see your name on the watch. You'd obviously copied and pasted everything out when I made that guess.
Did you seriously lock him out?
I did absolutely revoke his access to the... But I know that he'd already copied and pasted the content out, so
this is my Indiana Jones moment where I reached in and grabbed my hat as the pillow was coming down.
Oh man.
See, I should have just kept quiet and just done it.
Yeah, but then, like a typical villain, you can't help but monologue and gloat.
You should have just gone with, you know, no, Mr. Malik, I expect you to die on your ass.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, Billy Big Balls of the week. I think it's a bit of an inadvertent Billy Big Balls, but we'll say it all the same. So if you're a fan of pop, then you are probably familiar with Janet Jackson's, the sister of the late deceased Michael Jackson. Sorry, I blanked on his name there. So she released a song in 1989 called Rhythm Nation, and it is the cause of a cyber security vulnerability.
I'm sorry, you sound like a real dad. She released a song in 1989 called Rhythm Nation.
Okay, thank you. And the thing is that if you play this song on old Microsoft laptops, it causes the laptop to crash. Now, I know we've been talking for many years, like the world has been talking for many years about how there's certain tracks you play backwards and you can hear about satanic rituals or verses in that. This is proof that, you know, there's definitely something untoward in these music tracks. There was an investigation, and there is a CVE associated with it, 2022-38392. And what it is that the song contains the natural resonant frequency of certain 5400 RPM laptop hard drives.
Ah, I wondered why Twitter was talking about resonant frequencies of hard disks this week.
Ah, yes. So it was basically that, and the frequencies caused the hard drive to crash. So it's like a really lame superpower, but it's really cool. So I thought that is just like quality. So no word on whether like the CIA is now working on sending certain music CDs to Iranian nuclear power stations. Hey, check out this latest banging tune. It's called
All Habibi. Right, Grandad, Habibi. What's a CD?
Yeah. Oh, you know what I mean.
I think you mean MP3, don't you? Or in your case, M4V, which is, or whatever you send me.
At airports, they could be like playing certain songs on arrival to make sure that people aren't carrying, you know, particular equipment, which could be vulnerable to these.
There you go.
Frequencies.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. And well, I guess mostly North Korean hackers coming in with their Windows XP laptops.
Yeah. Not the the fact that the flight originated in North Korea. That's the red flag. Yeah. It's just we'll just play the music at the airport for everyone.
Now, not that I'm suggesting that anyone do this, but this like happens on old sort of like laptops, you know, running Windows XP, you know, what have you. What are the chances that if you went and blasted this out in a hospital somewhere, you'd
oh my god,
you'd cause another WannaCry.
All right, if next week's story is about an attack on some NHS trust that's happened because of this, we're pointing the finger straight back at you, Jav, for putting the idea out there.
So, yeah, I would have actually gone with ATMs rather than hospitals, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah, but I thought it was really, really interesting. And I'm sure, like you said, Tom, there's going to be all these resonant frequency experts cropping up saying, this is my time to shine. I've been preparing my whole life for this.
Oh, dear. Yeah, they were saying that it's between 2,000 and 4,000 hertz, which puts it right in the sweet spot for music or something like that. What are they talking about this for? Now I know. Anyway, I kind of like that. I wonder if Janet actually knew that. Can you imagine if she actually
did.
Is some kind
Absolutely.
Of like cyber criminal genius?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Oh, anyway, thank you, Jeff, for this week's
Billy Big Balls of the Week. If you work hard, research stories with diligence, and deliver well-edited, award-winning, studio-quality content for high-paying sponsors,
then you too can be usurped by three idiots who know how to think on their feet. You're listening to the award-winning Host Unknown podcast.
Yes, you are. And it is now that time of the day that we all look forward to. And what time of the day is it, Andy?
It is that time of the day where we head over to our news sources over at the InfoSec PA Newswire, who have been very busy bringing us the latest and greatest security news from around the globe.
Industry news.
Critical infrastructure at risk as thousands of VNC instances exposed.
Industry news.
Three extradited from UK to US on $5 million business email compromise charges.
Industry news.
Software patches flaw on macOS could let hackers bypass all security levels.
Industry news.
Water company says supply safe after ransom group claims.
Industry news.
Microsoft disrupts Russian cyber espionage group Seaborgium.
Industry news.
Healthcare provider issues warning after tracking pixels leak patient data.
Industry news.
Bug bounty giant slams quality of vendor patching.
Industry news.
Suspected Russian money launderer extradited to US.
Industry news.
Hackers deploy Bumblebee loader to breach target networks.
Industry news.
And that was this week's rather faltering
industry news.
Huge if true.
Huge if true.
So, Andy, that Microsoft disrupting the Russian cyber espionage group, what were they called?
It's a good question. I mean, some people say Seaborgium. Some others might say Seaborgium. Some may say... I have absolutely no idea. I don't even... Do you know what? Had I paid attention to this, I would have given it to someone else to read out.
Oh, man.
Oh, dear. But I can tell you, they have targeted over 30 organisations, mainly defence and intelligence consulting companies, NGOs and intergovernmental organisations, think tanks and higher education.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Host Unknown podcast, where all three members of us are breaking in teeth for horses.
The story which I enjoyed was this. You know this one about water company says supply safe after ransom group claims?
Yeah.
So it's about a UK water company sought to reassure the public their supply is still safe after hackers said that they had... hacked into the company, been there for months and could manipulate the industrial processes at the firm's plant. So this is about South Staffordshire PLC, which owns South Staffs Water and Cambridge Water. So, you know, the hackers got in, they got a whole load of data and stuff like that. However, the ransomware group that actually broke into it, Klopp, I believe, they actually posted all of this information stating that they had hacked into a completely different water company. I think they said they had owned Thames Water or something, which is a very different organisation altogether. And so all the claims when they first went public were about how they'd hacked Thames Water and all this this stuff. But
another water company said, it's okay, we weren't hacked.
No, so it was Thames Water like, how's that? Guys, this isn't us. We've not been hacked. You know, meanwhile, the hackers are out there saying, yep, it was. To the point where South Staffs have now actually put something on their website saying, yes, it is us, not them. But yeah. I mean, you know, even ransomware gangs make mistakes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've made a whole bunch of life choice mistakes, let's face it. But so I'm looking at this bug bounty giant.
Yeah, I was looking at that as well, trying to work out. I was like, is it Bug Crowd? Is it Hacker One? No, it is Trend Micro's Zero Day Initiative.
Oh, that well-known bug bounty group.
Apparently, they're responsible for nearly 64% of all vulnerabilities disclosed in 2021.
Yeah, but does that make them a bug bounty group? I don't know. 64, really? I find that quite difficult to believe.
When it says responsible for nearly 64% of all vulnerabilities disclosed, is that just not what they've... I mean, it's going to include like stuff that virus, that malware attempts to exploit as well, right? Not just like
bug
misconfiguration.
Bounties.
Yeah, not like application deficiencies.
That seems to have been twisted a little bit.
Well, that's what you got a marketing department for, right? You're talking, like, they're not wrong in the way that they phrased it. It's you know, it just how it's interpreted is
lies, damn lies, and statistics.
Exactly.
If someone can explain to us what's the difference between this and HackerOne or what have you, and between Google Labs or whatever the Google team is that release all the vulnerabilities, then that would be much appreciated. Write in to us.
I like the fact on the last one that hackers are deploying a transformer to breach target networks. I mean, that's pretty advanced tech right there.
I know.
So do you know what, actually, last week, Tom, I think you made a snide off-the-cuff comment about how LNK files, you know, being the method of choice to exploit networks these days instead of the, you know, any other form. And that story that you were talking to about Bumblebee is that the majority of their infections are actually due to people executing LNK files.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember making a snide comment, but I'm sure it still holds true.
Well, I bet you feel
you stand by
now,
it.
Don't you?
I'll stand by it. Whatever it was I said.
This man has no shame. It is impossible to shame Tom into anything.
Yeah, been there, done that. It's fine.
You know, the secret Tom has is that whenever he feels embarrassed about anything, he declares it, this is a kink, and moves on with it. And that's it. So that's how he avoids shame.
Because you can't kink shame.
No.
It's not allowed.
Exactly. No, not allowed to. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And one of my kinks is to make snide remarks. That was a good 2.5 minutes, as I recall. Yeah. Right, excellent. That's very good. Nice little roundup there. And that was this week's...
Industry News.
Go! Recording from the UK. You're listening to the Host Unknown podcast.
And we come barreling into the end of the show and the final segment, one of our favourites, or at least the favourite jingle anyway. It's time for...
Tweet of the Week.
And we always play that one twice.
Tweet of the Week.
And I shall take us home with this one. And this week's Tweet of the Week is from Deal Dog of Loft and CDC fame. And he says, announcing my new certification, CCSB, Certified Cybersecurity Burnout. If you have worked in the industry for over a decade, it is automatically conferred and may be placed on your resume and after your name if desired. No courses or prerequisites, just your soul.
Well, see, this puts me in a bit of a conundrum. A bit of a conundrum, because if you have worked in the industry for over a decade, you'd probably not want it referred to as cybersecurity. You'd want it to be information security or IT security burnout.
Yeah.
So the funny thing is that the majority of responses to this sort of fall into two categories. One which says, you know, what have you burned out long before a decade? And the other is, are there any AMFs? Because, you know, that's how they get you.
Yeah.
And the other one is, what if you didn't have a soul to start with? Which,
I guess. Oh, everybody's got at least one soul.
So, I don't know. I mean, like, I know this is a joke and I don't mean to distract from it. Like,
oh, here we go. Go on, let's take us down. You've got to get, like, if we can end it with something about suicide or, you know, dying, then you will have achieved your aim. Come on, let's bring the show down. Bring the tone down before we exit for the week. Come on, what you got, Jeff?
Oh, no, all I can hear is some rope swinging under tension from Jav's microphone.
Feet you know, hitting the back of a chair.
That's terrible.
You are such assholes. I was just going to say, I think if you state your social media, go into the office or your home office, do your job in cybersecurity and log off at 5 or 6 o'clock, you will not burn out. Majority of people will not burn out. I think it's social media, going to pointless conferences, engaging in pointless debate, that's what burns you out more than the actual job.
Feeling a bit burnt out right now, Chav?
No, I'm not at all. I haven't been to a conference in ages.
I thought you said in getting involved in pointless debate.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's just friendly banter.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. I think the challenge is, though, is you're not necessarily going to rise up through the ranks. And that's the same, not just with cybersecurity, but any kind of sort of professional
environment. Now you're very wrong there, because I know of many, I believe there are many very, very accomplished cybersecurity professionals out there who we have never seen on Twitter, hardly post on LinkedIn, and who definitely don't go whoring themselves out to speak on every CISO panel. They're just there. They do a really, really good job in their respective organisations, and they go home and they have a life outside of that, and they don't necessarily burn out.
So to bring this full circle with what we opened with, so if a security professional doesn't talk about what they've done on social media, have they actually done it? And on that note,
tweet of the week.
Right, gentlemen, thank you so much. Jav, thank you for for doing exactly what I expected you to do and disagreeing with me.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And Andy, thank you, sir.
Stay secure, my friends.
Stay secure.
You've been listening to the Host Unknown podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, comment and subscribe. If you hated it, please leave your best insults on our Reddit channel.
Worst episode ever.
r/smashing security.
I think we might have to publish this one with a trigger warning.
Well, Jav gets wound up at certain points.
I'm not wound up. I just make my point passionately and correctly. It's a well thought out point, and that's after you lock me out the show notes.